Good morning. Hello.
Did you see the one with
Thank you all for coming out this morning and remembering to set your clocks forward. My name is Jeff Abramson. I'm the Vice President of Film for a company called Gen Art. We're a national arts org that showcases emerging filmmakers, fashion designers, visual artists, and musicians. And I'll be your moderator today for the panel known as Long Talks on the Short Form. What I'd like to do is quickly go down the table and have our panelists introduce themselves. And since some of them are multifaceted individuals, communicate with you why they are on this particular panel, to the best of their knowledge. Mr. Fleischer.
I'm Evan Fleischer. I work at the Independent Film Channel. I'm vice president for alternative platform and business development. And that means I oversee all of our distribution into anything but our linear channel. So video on demand, cell phones, the internet. And I'm on this panel because I also am the founder and the person in charge of IFC's Media Lab, which is our online short film destination. People upload short films, viewers watch them, vote on them, and we bring the top-ranked stuff to our air. On a monthly basis, we produce a show, a half-hour show every month called Uploaded, which takes a look at the best of the rest of those short films, and then we also commission work from our favorite filmmakers.
I'm Nicole Barnett. I'm a filmmaker. I did a short called 14 that was at South by Southwest last year, among other festivals. And why am I on the panel? I think because I'm a filmmaker. I think that's why it has to be on the panel. That's what I'm going to assume.
My name is Jason Meal. I head original programming and acquisitions for Current TV. There's nothing I like to talk about on a Sunday morning after daylight savings time at South by Southwest than short form content. And Current is a national cable network here in the U.S. We're in about 40 million homes on Comcast, Time Warner, Dish, Direct. We're launching actually in the U.K. and Ireland tomorrow. So it's been a little bit of a crazy month and 12 million homes there. We are a short form network. So, you know, while we didn't necessarily set out to be a short form network per se, we're kind of a hybrid between news and entertainment. And, you know, and our stories are told in the form of what we call pods, which are short form content that could range from 30 seconds to 20 minutes. Depending and across all kinds of different types of subjects. So that's why I'm on the panel, because we do a lot of buying and making of short form content.
My name is Jamie Patrickoff. I'm the founder of a site called The Daily Reel, which basically finds the best in online video on the web, puts it all in one place, contextualize it, editorialize it, and then helps to monetize it. And then as well, we've created a community for user-generated content creators and, you know, prosumers and professional film creators to come and meet other content creators and share ideas and figure out how to get better at certain things and technical to, you know, how to get a lawyer. And then I also produced a film last year called Half Nelson, which was based on a short. So that's probably why I'm on the panel.
My name is Matthew Wettergreen. I'm the marketing director for Microcinema International. I'm standing in for Patrick Kwiatkowski. Microcinema distributes art-focused DVDs predominantly to galleries and museums around the nation and the world. And I'm on this panel because we have two film festivals that we run. First is called Independent Exposure, which we're now in our 11th year, which is 15 minutes or less film. And also Mobile Exposure, which is the longest-running mobile festival. 15 minutes or less, again, with content created by any mobile device.
Great. First question I have for whoever wants to jump in is, what do you think some of the biggest developments have been for short form content in the past year?
I'll tell you. I mean, I think YouTube and the growth of YouTube obviously is the biggest thing. You know, we talk about this all the time. It's that, you know, 2 years ago, and if you're creating any short form content, really the only thing you could do with it was submit it to a film festival. So, you know, we had 5 years ago or 7 years ago the democratization of filmmaking with, you know, digital video. So you had the ability and the tools to make content and professional content, where, you know, 6-7 years ago with, you know, the PD-150 and the VX-1000, you could make high quality content, but you still couldn't do anything with it. And now, you know, whether you're in LA or Iowa or, you know, Des Moines or, you know, Perth or, you know, India, you can make a piece of content just as likely to be seen by millions of people, or, you know, if the goal is professional, it's likely to be seen by, you know, someone who can make a difference in your career, or it's likely to be seen by an advertiser who can ultimately help you make money with that content, or it's just be able to be seen by people so you can get your message out there.
Yeah, it's really all about, you know, short video in general being available on multi-platform in a real way. I think, you know, it's, you know, this kind of promise of convergence that people have been talking about for 20 years, coming more close to reality. And YouTube's been a big part of that because, you know, I mean, it was just much easier to be able to upload something very simply and get it out there and, you know, develop an audience. So I think, you know, in general, you know, all of those, you know, that kind of technology, and, you know, just, you know, it catching online video, catching fire with the consumer community, I think has been, you know, been a huge, huge opportunity and the biggest change certainly over the past year.
Do you think that we're, that in general people are sacrificing quality though to try and jump on this bandwagon? You know, like, Nicole, would you want to put your film on YouTube?
I wouldn't actually mind putting it on YouTube. I think the thing was though, is that I was, the question is, how do you make, one of the questions I think we're going to talk about today is how do you make money with short films? And there's a lot of sites, you know, that you can sell your short to. So YouTube is fantastic because it reaches so many people, which is great. And I think they're starting to pay people, right? If I'm not mistaken.
They're working on it.
But, you know, that's one of the ways that you can. So if you sell it first to a couple of online sites, then eventually, you know, YouTube, but, I think, would be
awesome. I mean, do you think that, so you wouldn't mind the reduction in quality of your film playing on this Flash player to...
You know, I was just telling these guys that, you know, I felt like, I mean, God, Adam Films, I'm sorry if anyone's here, but I felt like the quality was sort of sacrificed just putting it online streaming because the sound is terrible and we don't even have dialogue in my short. So for me to say that is sort of weird because it was all about the sound, you know, it's all about the noises. But so I think just some sites, naturally, some quality is sort of lost. Now, you know, I'm sure there are some that are better than others, but...
I think there's also a distinction between the quality of the film as it's playing technologically and the quality of the stuff that surrounds it.
Oh, okay.
I think that there's something that goes on YouTube that, you know, I don't know that it's always the right venue for a short film like yours because it's going to sit next to someone getting kicked in the nuts and a cat jumping on a trampoline.
Yeah.
I think the greatest thing for short films online is the ability to provide a context for them and... have them be seen next to other short films in that context.
Yeah.
So I think it's twofold, two forms of quality.
But I also think, you know, one of the great things and what YouTube's enabled, you know, people to do is take their player and put it on other sites, like put it on your own site as an example, which
Absolutely.
Also has been great. Because, I mean, yes, granted, I mean, it's two things. It's a destination in and of itself, which many, many people go to, but it's also, you know, the technology to be able to allow you to take your... you know, your film and put it where you want to put it on your own site. And certainly, you know, we pay people for content when we buy it or when we commission it. And, you know, we certainly use YouTube and many other sites for that matter to, you know, to find filmmakers. And we find, you know, obviously more and more over the past year that filmmakers are using YouTube and other, you know, kind of online video sites and technologies to be able to put their reels online. So it's much easier for us to find people than having to, you know, have people send us DVDs and watch it and then find us. And, you know, it's much easier for us to be proactive, proactive in going out and finding, you know, filmmakers ourselves, and B, you know, allowing filmmakers to show us what they can do, you know, because of the proliferation of this, you know, type of technology.
Well, jumping on what Nicole was saying about filmmakers being able to make money through this medium, you know, maybe I'm a little bit a pessimist, but my theory on why YouTube enables you to embed your video is because they've always planned to throw ads into the videos and they want to spread those around. Like, so do you think that these YouTube making ad revenue shares, or you know, Rever.com and other sites that are willing to share revenue that filmmakers are going to be accepting of this model and allow the ads to travel with their films?
I do. I think though that the onus is on the site, the YouTube or what, you know, whether it's YouTube or IFC to put ads around those films that are contextual, that aren't offensive, that aren't going to chafe the filmmaker. IFC is not an ad supported network. We never ever run commercials and we don't cut our films that we put on air. But what we do, we have sponsors and we create content for sponsors. And we found that our audience really responds and respects it. The way we integrate a sponsor is much more respectful to the films and it's much more respectful to the audience than just slapping an ad in like YouTube might. I don't know what they're planning on doing, but you know, I think that it's finding that balance between commerce and art.
Matthew, do you guys incorporate sponsors into your DVDs and your programming? And do you share that money with the filmmakers?
Yeah, we actually do share the money with the filmmakers. They receive an honorarium for any film that's selected for independent exposure or mobile exposure, and for every screening, because these are screened around the world, they receive a portion of the profits.
And that's just off sales. But have you guys
sales incorporated? And also entrance fee, and also we do. Panasonic is our major sponsor, and we do put a bump at the beginning of the entire program. Not every film, though.
I mean, I think the question about obviously the can you make money from short films or online content is obviously a relatively large topic. But I think that it depends on what you're trying to do with your short film. I mean, if you have a short film, then your goal is to take it to a film festival and get it seen and get an agent and or turn it into a feature. That's your goal isn't to directly make money from that short online. That being said, short films can be pricey and you do want to, make money from them or at least make your money back. So I think the fact that now you can do that to some extent online is great, because I know, with the filmmakers from Half Nelson, I mean, they spent a lot of time on they did a short film called Gowanus Brooklyn, which won the grand jury prize at Sundance 3 years ago. And they sold that film. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Sometimes they'd call me and say, oh, we have to, master this tape because we're sending it to, this channel in Tokyo we sold our film to. And I was, okay. And they, and now if they did it today, they'd probably be selling it to, whoever online, whether it was doing a deal with Rever or doing a deal with, Currents, that it was online and offline or whatnot. So, and then you have the other extreme, which is the guy who puts the, his baby up there laughing or crying, whatever that baby was. And he's probably not trying to look to profit off his child, but maybe. I mean,
does that count as short film?
Does that count as user generated content?
When does user generated content short film?
Well, it's a good question.
There's actually on that tomorrow. Yeah, it's at 2 o'clock. I'm actually speaking on that one too, so come to that one. Good.
But so I think, and obviously when you talk about the quality issue, I mean, the quality issue is when you have, something you're showing on film versus showing on television versus showing on, in the, 240 by whatever those, whatever the size is versus showing it on mobile. So you're going to have those issues. The fact that there is an opportunity now to begin to start making money, whether it's $5 or $5,000, is just an exciting opportunity for short form content.
I guess it begs the question, like, what are the intentions of the creators and how are those intentions changing? In my experience, I've seen a lot of shifting going from filmmakers making shorts as reels or trying to,
calling cards
right. to make their feature or show off their talents to actually wanting to create short form episodic series or have the opportunity to make a relationship with the current TV to be producers. Do you think that short films as, have you guys seen shifting, where short films as calling cards is not the intentions of filmmakers as much anymore?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. It's actually really interesting when we talk to, a lot of people who are on our top 10, we actually have the site up there now, which our top 10 is where we, profile the kind of people we think are the most interesting and entertaining, creative, and have showed that they've actually done, you know, more than just one video. And a lot of them just wanted to make something. They didn't really have, there wasn't really any particular goal where I'm going to make this and then I'm going to get a television show, or I'm going to make this and I'm going to make money off it, or I'm going to make this and get an agent or make a feature film. They just made it because they wanted an outlet to make, you know, for their content. And they didn't even look at it like that. They didn't sit there and say, oh, I really need an outlet for my content. They said, you know, I just have this idea.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, that's why we created Media Lab, was not because, you know, we wanted a site. It was because we noticed in the world that more and more people were using film as a way to express themselves, just for the sake of expressing themselves, just for the sake of making a short film. You know, you got a cell phone with a video camera in it, you can make a short film. And desktop computers, you can edit a TV quality or even a theatrical quality film these days. So there's more and more opportunity, and more people are choosing film as that medium. It just seemed like a natural extension of what IFC does, of embracing indie filmmakers, to embrace all these people all over the place who don't have access to film festivals, or who aren't connected, or who don't have agents, just to provide another outlet to sort of elevate the content that people are making just because they want to.
I mean, Current was essentially founded on the belief that, you know, because it's much easier for anyone to have access to materials to make films at this point, there's just a lot more films being made. And you know, one of the reasons actually we became short form is we were one of the early kind of at the early vanguard of the whole idea of UGC and having an independent voice and allowing different voices to be heard. And you know, and the fact that everybody had a story to tell, and you know, one of the main reasons we decided to move into the short form realm was more so because it's easier for someone to tell a story if they're not a professional filmmaker, especially at 3 or 5 minutes than it is at 30 minutes or 60 minutes or 90 minutes. So I think that that's definitely, you know, kind of, you know, definitely part of what's going on here. And I do think there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of people that have seized the opportunity to say this is something that A, can get you recognition, but B, you can make money from. If you look at the rise of, you know, blogs and things that you wouldn't necessarily define as, you know, short form film necessarily, but, you know, but our short form content is, you know, I mean, things like, you know, things like Rockaboom, things like, you know, Ask a Ninja, things like, you know, Lonely Girl 15. I mean, these are things that were designed specifically A, to, you know, get voices out there, but B, as a way to, you know, to potentially commercialize something too. It wasn't all about just putting something out there for the sake of putting some out there. So I think that, you know, that there, you know, if you think about all of the long form features that are made, both narrative and documentary, that never ever get seen by anyone except at film festivals. I mean, if you think about, you know, short form and what the potential is, even though I think we're still at a really early time, you know, I think it's a pretty interesting opportunity.
Nicole, do you think that you're competing with a bunch of amateurs now?
Well, it's funny because I was just thinking about how, you know, I've actually, Current TV has emailed me, a couple of people have emailed me to make these like 3-minute short films. And I find it so hard to do that for some reason. So I don't know. It's like a strange thing because I've tried. I've sat there and, you know, spent hours trying to figure out, you know, you guys were giving away, it was like a contest where you can win $100,000 or something. And I was like, wow, that would be fantastic, you know, to make a 3-minute short and win $100,000. But I find it hard to do that way. So I don't know. I sort of feel like that's its own world. And, mm-hmm. you know, most of the people who I've encountered at festivals, short filmmakers, they're, it's a calling card for them. Or, you know, they have a feature of that short and they really just want to show that they can do it. And, you know, or just to get into these festivals to meet financiers. And so I don't know. I mean, I don't, it doesn't really feel like competition because I don't feel like I can really compete in their world right
okay.
now. You
know, it's different. There's different things going on.
Yeah.
We're not getting any submissions in any of the festivals that are user generated. We're not getting anything, you know, cats jumping on trampolines, you know, so to address the intent, I think that, you know, the same people that weren't watching short films last year are still not watching short films this year. They're just watching crap on YouTube. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, we all love to watch, you know, our mom opening a present and having like snakes jump out, right? But it's
no, but also, I mean, just to clarify, the Current TV thing was like a human rights. I mean, it was like it was something important. It wasn't just, you know, make a 3-minute short on, you know, nothing and you can win $100,000. It was like it had some, you know, some depth and some meaning to it. But That was so, just a clarify. But I don't want you don't know cats well, jumping.
But if you had cats involved, that would be fine.
I think it speaks to context, though. I think you guys don't attract that kind of filmmaker because that's not who you are. I
mean, that's totally right.
YouTube sets it up so that anybody that's got a piece of video, you can submit the thing. You know, we screen everything that comes into Media Lab, but we just make sure that it's not porn and it's not a snuff film. And then those come to my inbox. But but anything else we accept, and that would include, I guess, cats jumping on trampolines, but people don't submit that to us because that's not who we are. So people don't come there expecting to be able to submit that kind of content to us. So I think that's why you haven't gotten that stuff either.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually interesting. With the Daily Reel, we see the same thing. We rarely see people submitting, you know, cats jumping on trampoline. I feel like we should find the laughing pandas. You know, coughing pandas, sneezing pandas. We rarely see that, but you know, I think people just because they realize that that's not what we're doing. But I think, you know, the exciting thing that if you look at what, you know, what are people watching on YouTube or any of the video hosting sites, they're not watching short films. They're not watching the same thing with the festival. And that's safe to say. I mean, when you see what's got hundreds of thousands of views.
Yeah.
That being said,
pirated TV.
What?
It's pirated TV.
Right.
That's on YouTube. I was talking to a friend yesterday. I told him I was speaking on this panel. And he goes, oh, it's the panel tomorrow about user-generated content. He goes, oh, what's that like on YouTube? I was like, yeah, you know, like short films and things. Like, he's like, there's short films on YouTube?
Well, but what I was trying to get to, though, is that they're not watching them, though, but when you look at short film where we were a year ago with short films, I mean, the only people watching them were some of the people coming to film festivals. Mm. I mean, literally some. I mean, how many people in here have gone to more than one shorts program at a film festival? Hey, that's cool.
Well,
okay, we're in the short program. So, but the point is, I mean, you guys all know it. I mean, how many of them, I mean, at Sundance, yes, they sell it at Sundance because you can't get tickets to anything else as well. But that's really the case. I mean, I produce short films. I have a site that's based on short form content. And short films are probably one of the most important things within the film business and also now within user generated content. But that's not what people are watching. But at the same time, it's increased a millionfold. I wouldn't even say a thousandfold. I mean, there are people, you know, go to YouTube and you look at a short film, there's still 10,000 people that might have seen it versus a year ago. I mean, you know, Nicolette's film, I mean, was probably seen by, you know, at festivals, probably seen by maybe a couple thousand people, right? I mean, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many festivals you played, but.
Yeah.
So that's an amazing thing. Not to say that the goal always is to have as many people as possible see your film, but it's kind of a part of it.
Well, it's true. I mean, the filmmakers that I work with, Four Eyed Monsters, I mean, they're preaching a lot about how, you know, 3,000 people saw their feature on the festival circuit, and, you know, upwards of 3 million now probably have seen episodes of their podcast online.
Sure.
And while people aren't necessarily going to YouTube to see short films right now, my question is, you know, I know for a fact that YouTube is trying to, just yesterday I got an email from somebody that's leaving the production company that did Little Miss Sunshine to go work for YouTube to help legitimize their, you know, film content. And if YouTube starts to try to legitimize their content, do you think people will jump on that and start to watch?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are always going to, there's always going to be a scale that's going to be a very, you know, where on the high end, you're going to have pirated content they can get somewhere else, but it's just easier to get it on YouTube. But I think we're seeing the on the other end, I think it's increasing. And YouTube's obviously just one example of, I mean, as we grow, I mean, the number of, you know, video hosting sites is probably, you know, over 300.
I was going to say, I agree. And I don't know that YouTube's the end all be all. I think that, I think Google made a big mistake, honestly. I mean, I don't know that they make a lot of mistakes, but I think that, it's only YouTube until another YouTube comes along.
And so every day, you know, I get an email about some new place to post films, and some people are spending a lot of money to try to recruit people to their sites. I mean, is this just 1999 all over again?
Well, I think there's definitely got to be a, you know, a correction here. I mean, the number of people just trying to be the next YouTube. I mean, I think we're actually past that point now. I mean, because there's so many of them that are going to fail. Whether or not YouTube fails or not, I mean, $15 million in revenue versus on a, you know, $1.6 billion sales, gonna obviously, you know, is a negative return there, but Google doesn't really care about $1.6 billion. So
In stock.
You know, exactly, in stock. But I think the you know, the next thing you're going to see, and not to, you know, tout the Daily Reel, because I think there, but I think there are a lot of people going to start doing this, is obviously filtering and editorializing, and that's what Current's doing, that's what IFC is doing, that's what, you know, everybody on this panel. Yeah,
ultimately, it's context always.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I actually, Evan and Jason, if you guys could talk about the process, because what both of you guys do is you're multi-platform. So if you could talk about, you know, how the filtering process works.
Well, we do things in different ways. I mean, we were always founded to try to provide an independent voice, and so, you know, opening up to as many, you know, as many voices as possible. So one of the things we designed the company from the beginning to have an online component that would help to feed the television component. So you know, from a UGC perspective, we call VC squared or viewer created content, which again is the high end, you know, portion. It's not the, you know, not the random, you know, kind of Mentos and Coke stuff. It's you know, it's really short form, you know, mostly documentary journalistic type content. You know, anybody can submit anything to our site, and you know, then if we decide we want to put it on television, we people can green light. Decide, you know, and give us indications of what they like and what they like to see. You know, if the community likes it, if we like it, and we, you know, we decide to buy it for television, we negotiate with the filmmaker, and then, you know, then we bring it onto TV as well. And so that's the main reason, main way from an, you know, from an online perspective that you can, you know, get onto television. But we also work with filmmakers to just buy films at festivals and, you know, commission, you know, people to make films, and, you know, just buy film through a normal acquisitions process too. So I guess it works in different ways. But, you know, again, the main driver of what we do is, you know, to allow people to submit stuff online, to allow the community to bubble things up, to allow our executives, and the people on our programming staff, including myself, to, you know, to find films that we like and to be able to buy those films for television.
Now, just the films that are submitted aren't always exactly the same as the ones that go on air, right?
Well,
you make a little adjustment.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're very much about trying to help, you know, make, you know, the film play as well as we can, both, you know, specifically for Current. So we work very closely with filmmakers to be able to provide support in all kinds of different ways to, you know, to make the product, make the product really sing on our air, if we decide we're going to buy it. And, you know, we do all kinds of things. We allow filmmakers now to get access, for instance, to music libraries that we have deals with that they've agreed to work, you know, work with us to allow, you know, filmmakers to use. And, you know, we have our editorial staff, our producers and editors work very closely hand in hand with, you know, with producers to, you know, to make adjustments, you know, before we bring things to air. Some things we bring to air completely as, you know, as is. Some things we, you know, we just work with the filmmaker to try to make as strong as we can.
I have a question. Do you ever change the content, or is it mostly just changing out music, getting music rights and getting the rights to things? But is content,
it's both. I mean, it's not, we don't change content. We work with a filmmaker to, you know, essentially like any network, to give notes and say, hey, well, why don't we do this instead of this? How about maybe this would work better? Maybe this is a way to tell the story. It's really just a resource, you know, for us to work with filmmakers. Like I said, sometimes we don't change anything at all. And sometimes we work with filmmakers to, you know, to try to make things as strong as we can. Some of it is music, some of it is rights. You know, that's obviously a big issue. But, you know, some of it is, you know, content, but it's all about discussion. Like I said, and we're working, you know, because we tend to work with a wide variety of filmmakers, some of which are, you know, have vast amounts of experience and some of which have never produced a film before. You know, it's a spectrum. I mean, people who produce a lot of films and are very professional, we don't want to go in and, you know, make changes just because we can. We do it, you know, only, you know, we have plenty of other things to do to keep us busy. But, you know, oftentimes, especially with, you know, with filmmakers who have never done something before and this is the first time they've kind of had exposure, you know, they require hand-holding and training, and we kind of work with them in that capacity. Mm-hmm, so,
Evan, how about IFC? How does the filtering work?
Well, IFC, you know, we're about, let's see, we're 13 years old. And we have been, we've been acquiring and producing short films for our air since the beginning. We put them on blocks, on our channel between our feature films. You know, we don't cut our films, but we do start our feature films on the hour. So what'll happen is a feature film that's a minute 45, you got 15 minutes left till the top of the next hour. And, you know, we run promos for our other films in that space, but we also run short film blocks in that leftover time. So yeah, since the get-go, we've been working with short form, and it's interesting because for IFC, we tend to think of independent film as the original user-generated content. There's like this user-generated boom now, or so-called boom, but we think of indie filmmakers as user-generated, working outside of the mainstream media. So too are independent filmmakers working outside of the mainstream Hollywood. From that sense, we feel like we've been in the user-generated content business since our inception. We are a user-generated content channel, and that independent filmmakers are user-generated content makers. With Media Lab, like I was saying before, it was created out of an extension of what we were already doing, embracing independent voices, giving platform to people who don't have a platform, showcasing independent talent. And it's just a technological way of achieving that. We looked at the web and said, hey, this would be a really easy, turnkey way for people to be able to show us more stuff and for us to be able to see more stuff. And the way the filter works is twofold. It's primarily dictated by the viewers who watch the stuff and vote on it and give us comments and feedback. And we take those top ranked films once a month and we put them on our air. But then there's also a flip side to that in that we curate a lot of it too. And we do the show called Uploaded, which is a half hour show every month that looks at the best of the rest, things that we think our audience would love to see that may or may not be top ranked, because the as democratic as we want it to be, it's not really. Ultimately, whoever has the most friends on MySpace is going to get the most votes in Media Lab because they're going to send all their people to vote, and so it's fair, but it's not entirely fair. So we look at the best of the rest, and we put it into Uploaded. But beyond that, we also are always looking at our favorite stuff in here for development. We are developing two series currently with filmmakers who submitted stuff to Media Lab, who we discovered at a Media Lab. We are giving paying gigs to a lot of these filmmakers. We're about to embark on a project with a major automotive manufacturer where three of our favorite Media Lab filmmakers are going to make short films for this car maker. It's sort of like the BMW films, but it may be a tenth of the budget.
So you don't, unlike Current though, you don't pay to put the stuff on air.
No, we think of IFC and Media Lab specifically as more of a virtual film festival. We see the benefit that we're giving is exposure, is the potential for appearing on our air, is the potential for us contracting a filmmaker for a paying gig, and the opportunity for them to say that they've got a film in Media Lab and that that IFC has given them a sort of stamp, because the brand carries a little bit of weight.
That's true. Matthew, we talked earlier about, or you said, the same people who weren't watching shorts last year, might still not be watching shorts this year. With the new sort of the new interest in shorts that are coming out of all these websites, do you think that there's an opportunity to turn on a lot of new audiences? For example, Magnolia is, for 2 years now has released the Oscar shorts theatrically. And the last time I looked at their box office, they were doing all right. And, you think this is a viable way to get short content out there theatrically?
I think there's a lot of opportunity to, I think everybody's got a taste for short film now. Now that they've been watching, it's easy to get, and there's so many places to put it. But, I look at YouTube for Nicole's purposes, more of a promotional tool. The quality's lower. It's, it could be even a shorter version of her short already to send her to the site, to her own site, place to order the film, something like that. But now that people have a taste for these short films, it's time to start using different techniques in order to get it to make money for the filmmakers in ways like licensing, turning it into a music video. And that's something we haven't actually talked about, is using, short film as music video. That definitely makes money. Packages, DVDs, sell it on the label. And one thing that Jeff and I were talking about before was that film started as short film. And then it was only when features started that it started to be marginalized. and it's more effective for an advertiser to pay money to show their stuff before film rather than show a short film before a feature film. But that's a perfect spot to get your film shown. It's a captive audience. They can't leave. They have to watch it, even if it sucks. I think so. Licensing and shorts before features are a good way to move it. Also, to add to the licensing thing, Moby's Play was one of the most successful albums of all time because V2's goal was to get every single song licensed. And they did. And as a result, everybody heard it and then they went back and bought the album. You know, depending on what your eventual goal is with your film, if more people are going to see your work as a result of licensing it, it's probably not that bad of a trade-off in the long run.
Nicole, would you license your film to Bank of America to help get people to their website to do transactions? Not that your film is appropriate for Bank of America.
Yeah, no, I don't think they'd want my film. But
what about work?
Bank of Utah, maybe?
Your style.
Yeah.
I mean, if they liked your style, would you do a commercial for them?
I don't know. Because, I guess I would. I mean, I don't... At this point, I feel like it is sort of that... About because I one of the things I was going to bring up earlier was on Adam Films before there was a commercial before my short, and it was a bunch of like half naked cave women running down, and I started laughing when I clicked in for the first time because it was I don't know if it's still before, but it was like these half naked cave women running through the ocean, and I just thought, oh Lord, you know, people are going to watch my short after this, and it's such a strange, you know, juxtaposition. But I worked in commercials for years before I started making shorts. So I know the commercial world pretty well. And, you know, I didn't want to be a commercial director. So that's not my ultimate goal. But, you know, I do need to make money and, you know, as all filmmakers do. So I would probably consider it depending on what they were trying to do.
I think I'm more curious though, really, like as a filmmaker, the short film that you made that you intended as a calling card, mm-hmm. To play festivals, would you start to license that out to corporations to use to just draw eyeballs to their site? It may be irrelevant to their content, you know, the content of the website. They just want to bring people in. I mean, car companies are working with, IFC, you know, at some point, I think it's feasible to think that, that, you know, a car company will hire an IFC type company or Gen Art already does this sort of thing to go look for, like Delta Airlines hired us to find short films to curate for them.
Yeah.
Now granted, they gave away $10,000, so it wasn't a bad deal, but like, you know, if they just wanted to put something on their website, because it happened to be about traveling and give a nominal fee to the filmmaker, but you know, would you sell out?
I think it related in some way. I mean, that's the hard thing is my film wouldn't relate. So that's a weird question, but for me, I think if it had something to do with whatever, if it fit, I can see that.
That's a good question. I'm curious though, among filmmakers, you and other filmmakers in the room, the appeal of commercial work, I wonder, you know, is that something that is a potential a sore spot? Or because, you know, like we look in the TV business, I think we're pretty well aware that the 30-second television spot is on its way out. Mm-hmm. That, you know, with TiVo and DVRs, people aren't watching commercials anymore. I haven't watched a commercial in probably 2 years because I have a DVR and I skip everything. But... you know, there's the opportunity to make something like what we're doing on IFC or what Jeff did with Delta, you know, like to have content that's got a brand integrated into it in a very elegant way. And that takes that's not done by ad agencies for the most part. It's done by filmmakers.
Yeah.
So I would think but again, like, I don't know if filmmakers want to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it depends on what your ultimate goal is. I met a ton of people in festivals who make shorts, and their goal is they want to make commercials, you know, they just happen to make a short that, you know, they wanted to make and it got into all these festivals, but that's what they want to do is commercials. So I think that there is that, you know, it depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, I guess
do,
from person to person.
Person to person, it really would vary.
I think people are, I love when it always comes down to, you know, you're selling out if you're making any money from any of these things or working with a brand or, I think when there's content that relates to a brand or when there's something that makes sense, especially with product integration now. I mean, I actually, I'm working on a film that we participated in this Chrysler film project. Mm-hmm. So, the filmmaker wasn't that excited about the whole concept because he just didn't want this, you know, to be kind of beholden to Chrysler. And so, but we participated in it, submitted the script, got selected. And then after there were five people selected, they made, they gave us like $10,000 to make a short. And then the winner was selected, and then Chrysler put in $250,000 into the budget of the film, and then $1 million in matching funds for P&A. And, the filmmaker still wasn't, when we won the film, he was still concerned about the idea of Chrysler being a part of the film, because what's that going to mean? What am I going to have? How am I going to have to sell my soul in order to have, you know, and I'm going to have to use a car, and have, you know, it doesn't make sense for my, you know, lead character to use a Chrysler car. And then finally he kind of wrapped his head around it and figured out which car in the Chrysler family made sense for the main character to drive. And it became a, you know, so I think that, but ultimately he wanted to get his film made. And the fact that money was going to help get his film made, you know, was a big deal. And I think that, you know, so I think there's a line, but at the same time, people want to, you know, extend their careers. They want to figure out ways to generate revenue. So I think that the concept of kind of, you know, brands and advertisers and people kind of coming together with content creators is just a natural progression for people to be able to get their content out there.
I have a question about that, and then we'll get a question. Okay. I'm sorry, I had the computer here, so. We'll ask your question, then I want to follow up on that. Cause
I feel like we're missing a major piece to this conversation, which is how can you monetize your films? I mean, you guys are talking about work for hire or sponsorships and stuff like that, but I have a company called Girly Action. We do media, PR and marketing, mostly in the music business. I've been in the music business for 15 years, and in the late 90s, we were Napster's first PR agency. And back in those days, pretty much everyone in the music business said it's absolutely impossible to monetize digital music. It's just impossible. Of course, it took a computer guy to prove that that's absolutely not true. So we now have a ready-made audience of people, especially under 25, who are completely used to watching short form. They watch music videos, is all they watch. You've got the, you know, watching on the web, you've got watching on your mobile device. And so it seems to me there should be a ready-made audience for selling streams, pay-per-view, or downloads. I mean, the home video market is huge. So, but I don't hear anyone talking about, you know, creating a site where you can go online and buy a download, you know, download a video for $5. iTunes is starting to do it. And I'm wondering if they're the only ones doing it and why there isn't more of that going on. Just straight up make a film and sell it to your audience.
Nicole.
No, I was just going to say that was because Shorts International was one of the people who contacted me, and they just put a bunch of shorts online. They didn't end up taking mine to put on their website, but there are places that are starting to do that. But, you know, I have to say, when I started last year our film started at Sundance, and I didn't even know that you could do anything with your short. My whole goal was just to, you know, try and get an agent, maybe meet some producers, you know, make a feature. And so the whole world just opened up last year. I felt like for me, where it was just like, wow, you know, there are these avenues you can sell it to. And I was, you know, I'm going to eventually put it on more sites, but it's mostly just selling to websites. And I've had people want to put it on compilation DVDs to sell it.
I think there's probably, you know, there's hundreds and not thousands of websites that are monetizing short form content. You know, the issue is, and the same thing happened with music, you can get it for free. I mean, you can get it for free anywhere. You can get anything for free. I mean, you can get television shows, you can get, you know, movies, you can get whatever you want for free, so why buy it? I mean, that's, now, the same argument was made for music. The music industry is in a state of, you know, turmoil still to this day, and will be probably for another 10 years, where, you know, they're trying to figure out how to make money again. How do they become profitable? So hopefully that won't, you know, it's not going to happen to the film business overall. You know, I think a lot of people feel like it probably will in some way. But, you know, there's going to be a time when short form content is just a way of life and a
in a business that you're just in, that's just what you make. You don't make short form content in order to make long form content. You just make short form content because that's who you are and what you do. We're just not at that stage yet. I mean, it's just going to take a while. I mean, why go spend, you know, $2 or $5 on a site to buy short form content when, you know, you can get it anywhere? And at the same time, sure.
Well, and also, how much money can you realistically make? I mean, how much money have you made off your short?
$1,500.
I mean, you know, like you sell a short on iTunes for $2, and the filmmaker ultimately is getting something like 30 cents for each sale. Mm-hmm. And the people that I know that are selling even through iTunes aren't making very much money. And then you also have the websites that are doing ad shares. We have a short from our Delta contest that's been on Rever, and it's been viewed, you know, it's kind of modest amount, like 35,000 times, but it's generated $200. So, the models may not fully be there yet. It's not really worth it yet to the filmmakers either. So, or the companies doing it. Yes.
I can probably help answer her question. I think I just saw a site yesterday called IndieFlix.
Yep. I was actually going to mention IndieFlix. Yeah, there's also one called IndiePix.
What's that?
IndiePix also does the same sort of thing.
So they're selling films. I didn't actually look closely enough to see if it was short film or not, but I'm pretty sure there's a lot of short films. I actually work for a company called DivX. DivX is a video file format that's popular on the internet as well, and we have an online community called Stage 6. And in a month, right now everything's free, but in a month we're launching our download to own, and you're going to be able to, you know, upload a film in perfect DVD quality and put a price tag on it. People will be able to download it, watch it on their PCs, but they'll also be able to burn it onto CDRs and DVDRs and watch it in their living room on a DivX certified DVD player. So we're kind of at the forefront of the distribution of high quality feature films and independent films for viewing in a living room environment.
But I have a question for you though.
Big thing is what Jamie was saying makes a lot of sense. And it's very much a mystery to me who's going to pay for content when you can get almost everything for free. Fortunately, most of the sites out there right now that are distributing short film are distributing it in Flash. That it's streaming and it looks like shit. So,
go ahead.
Well, all I was going to say is, I mean, I would say two things on that front. First of all, you can make the same argument for music, and you know, obviously, iTunes is making a lot of money. I think people don't mind paying for content per se if they have an easy way to do so. But I do think there's a difference between video and music. I think people, you know, while the home entertainment business is very large, you know, it's dominated by studio driven DVDs, and not short form content. It's trying to get people familiar with buying short form content and with buying short form content and paying for it in that way. Whereas in the music industry, you know, people were always used to paying money for albums or songs. I mean, people just did that. That was the way you purchased things. I mean, you always bought a tape or a record or a CD. And so I think there is some, you know, some kind of changing of consumer behavior in terms of buying video because so many people are used to seeing it free, you know, not only online, but on TV, essentially, because you're paying for your cable bill, but it's not the same as paying on an a la carte basis for content. So I think there is some, difference between how the music industry has evolved and how the video industry might likely do so as well. I mean, I think it's easy for people to pay $2 to buy an episode of Lost on iTunes, but it's going to be a longer kind of road before people are going to be willing to, you know, to do things for the long tail.
Yes. I think that's still what we're looking at, you know, is that audiences need more opportunities to be exposed to what this content is, and that's kind of what's going on right now. And then the monetization will follow because they're going to be wanting this content. And getting it in new ways, or, you know, the companies that have the money that can support the integration of the different mediums and be able to download, you'll download it, you own it, you can put it in all your different devices and keep it forever, share it with people. I mean, it may come, but I think that right now people still aren't looking to buy short films. Go ahead.
I guess my question was about, I'm from a site called howdoisaythis.com, and we've started making a bunch of short films that are all kind of from the same voice. And I actually moderated a panel with Four Eyed Monsters like a while ago, and they were talking about the idea of filmmaker as like band. And if you see that there's an opportunity for short filmmakers to kind of package albums or something, I guess more from an indie, like grassroots way, like kind of what Current TV does, but if I guess your idea is about taking distribution back to the filmmaker as band.
I have a question for the panelists. For fear of never being able to work with any of you again, there's so much opportunity for filmmakers out there now to submit their work. And admittedly, I'll say too, you know, Gen Art, we've run a couple competitions, and whether the prize is the opportunity to be on IFC TV or win a trip to Australia or win $100,000, aren't you shocked at how few people are submitting? Anyone want to answer that? Are you not shocked yet?
No, yes.
You know, it's for again, to me, it's coming back to quality versus quantity. I mean, no, we don't get YouTube numbers, but we don't want to be YouTube numbers if it means cats jumping on trampolines. You know, I think that we've been perfectly happy with the quality of the stuff that's been submitted.
Well, and
Jeff, when you say
exactly,
I mean, like I'm aware of people who are running reasonable prizes on their contests that are getting as few as like, you know, a couple dozen submissions.
No, it's never been a couple dozen for us. But I also think that there's just a you know, people, because there are so many sites out there where you can submit your content, that it's, you know, it's sometimes difficult for one-off competitions to cut through the clutter, I think.
Right. I mean, I'm not necessarily I know, you know, the brand of who's running the competition is going to have an impact, but even if the prize is really good and the brand isn't, you know, as trusted yet, my point is, if you have stuff and you see these opportunities, you should submit.
But do you mean for short film related contest, for online video contest? Just are you saying? I mean, just
yeah, pretty much, yes.
Short film,
like Yahoo because, did one.
But,
a couple
I mean, but
years
if you look at, I don't
try
know,
back
I mean,
a film.
I think there's some reason, and I know you mean there's some disconnect between because people apply for their films for Sundance or South by Southwest. I don't know what numbers of Sundance are, but I want to say they're in the,
4,500 shorts. For shorts, yeah.
So it's like you would assume, hey, you know, if you're going to send the, you know, $5 to, $3 to ship it there, why don't you ship it to the place you can win $100,000 or $5,000 or freaking
or
iPod.
Or upload it in the ship.
Exactly. Or, you know, win an iPod. I mean, what, you know, why not?
Well, because here's one of the things that I encountered was Sundance and a lot of the bigger festivals
won't let you.
Right. If you're playing online, you're disqualified from the festival. And that's, one of the programmers was trying to change that last year because, you know, Sundance now does their online thing, which some of the other festivals were like, well, that's going to disqualify them from our festival. And it's like, so it was a little game that you had to sort of play where you just couldn't sell it anywhere online for a year.
You're
which,
totally right.
Which I hope that changes because that seemed kind of, I mean, I know why they do it because it's like, well, why would I want to pay $10 to go see a bunch of shorts when I can just watch them online? I get it in a way, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I would get phone calls every few months saying, can you sell it now? Can you sell it now? You know, so it was that weird thing.
That's definitely something you have to look into. I mean, Gen Art has, you know, our attitude about it is we don't care if a short's online. We would still potentially program it in our festival. But if the film has gotten a lot of exposure online, then we might take that in consideration against another short that could use the exposure more. But I think it's kind of, you know, BS that festivals are getting in the way of filmmakers trying to get exposure.
Are there exclusivity issues? If Current TV were to buy our short film, would that prevent us from showing it on other online venues as well?
Yeah, the answer is, of course, it depends. Yeah, I mean, look, especially for us, we have a unique problem because we are a television network and we do pay people for content. But because we're a television network and because of our relationships with people like Comcast and DirecTV, you know, we can't have everything playing everywhere else all the time because otherwise it would defeat the whole purpose of how cable television works. So, you know, the answer is, yeah, we like to have things exclusively whenever we possibly can. Not necessarily in all media. It depends. If we're commissioning someone to do something, we're paying them to do that. Then we expect that we're gonna generally own all the rights. But if we're acquiring something, it just depends on what the piece is and what makes the most sense. I mean, I buy things not exclusively all the time, and you know, I buy things exclusively much of the time as well. It just depends on what the piece is and how we're going to play it. I mean, our preference, of course, is always to have exclusivity, particularly in certain media like television, like online. But the online piece is frankly more so as a defensive measure to have it not have exposure everywhere else, as opposed to us necessarily wanting to take full advantage of necessarily putting it online. But exclusivity is certainly a major issue, particularly for us, and is generally the case, although I'd like to hear your thought about that.
We don't, with Media Lab, we do not ask for exclusivity.
But you also don't pay.
Well, right. So, but that's what I'm saying is we see it as, it's a different, the reasoning behind Media Lab is a little bit different. You know, it's an exposure thing. So we don't ask for exclusivity. Whereas we do acquire films, our acquisitions group acquires short films separately from Media Lab. And in that case, they do purchase the rights for that content, for exclusive rights, for the most part.
Yes, and...
Do you all see any future for the idea of a video single?
A video what?
Video single. You know,
oh. Well, I mean, the videos, you have that online for free.
What's a 45?
I mean, I guess that's kind of what iTunes, I mean, people are downloading shorts in iTunes for $2 and...
Well, certainly in the music realm in particular, although we're not necessarily talking just about that, I mean, you know, there's been so many bands that have used MySpace and YouTube to launch, you know, their complete careers. I mean, in a lot of ways, they're using the kind of single methodology in that way. And it's been true again on the, you know, on the side of, you know, launching, things like Lonely Girl. I mean, that's, you know, essentially that's what they did, you know, by starting to upload these things. They essentially started to build buzz around episodics that, you know, that launched a series. So.
I think we have to wrap up this panel. Is there one last question? My sort of closing comment, if anyone else has anything you can say, is I just say if you're a short-form content creator, just keep making stuff. Look for those opportunities to be, inspired to make something, whether it's a contest or competition or just an idea. I mean, you don't have to shoot things on 35mm on, you know, $30,000 budgets and get the kind of exposure that you're looking for anymore.
Yeah, and I also think it's really exciting the quality of some of the user-generated content over the past, you know, year has just increased so dramatically. I mean, the stuff that we've been finding now on the Daily Reel is just, I was shocked. And that was one of the things when we started the company out, we were like, how are we going to find anything that's good? I mean, it's just like this stuff. We can't show cats on trampolines. We have to find good. And the amount of content we find from people who had never had any aspirations of doing anything. I mean, we have one of this animation short that was a guy who's an accountant. And, you know, it's amazing. And he's like this 17-year-old kid in London did this other piece that was like mixed animation and it's just amazing, amazing content. And now it's still, you know, few and far between is, you know, would be a very a simple way to describe it, but it's, for every, 100,000 videos, there's probably one that's really, interesting and creative and entertaining and got all the qualities. But I think that's really exciting. And I think that was a great point that, I'm a user generated content creator, I mean, just like, someone is who creates and that's really true with independent filmmaking. So I think there's a, that's a really exciting thing to see. And I think that you're going to see within the next year more and more people who started out as user generated content creators online crossing over, and you're already seeing the people getting agents and doing deals with television. And I think you're going to start seeing, feature films that are created by those people within the next year or two, and by myself hopefully too. So,
all right. Well, thank you all for coming.